Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears, live and coming at you here on a Tuesday, March the 1st, 2022. We are now into the month of March. How about that? Just after 13 minutes past the hour, and can you hear that I've got a little more pep in my voice this morning? I do have a large Diet Coke here with me this morning. So all is well with the world as far as that goes. We have a guest coming up here in just a couple minutes this first hour, so I'm not going to get into my harrowing experience yesterday, which really led into this morning. So stay with us, though, because at 9:15 this morning, I'm going to tell you about some interesting things that happened yesterday that have led into this morning. I definitely did get a pop this morning, and I definitely am in the studio here and will be doing the show, but that's a minor miracle this morning that I'm here doing that, but I'll tell you why that is, starting at 9:15. Our guest this hour is going to be a lot of fun because we're going to cover something that I know is of interest to everyone. I'm not going to give it away because our guest is going to join us here in about a minute, but trust me, this is going to be very informational for me, as well as I hope you, the listening audience. I got a book. Or really, I guess a magazine. Here our guest comes, so I think I'm going to introduce our guest here as we go along here this morning. March the 1st, who would have thought that we're blowing right into this year, 2022. But as I was telling the listeners here this morning, we have a guest this morning who has been on this show many, many times. We have had a great relationship with the Old Farmer's Almanac now, dating back probably more, maybe even two decades. I know it's been over a decade. And it's always fun to talk about the weather. Well, one of the aspects of the weather, well, I guess I should say something that is impacted by the weather, certainly here in the Midwest, is gardening. And as many of you know, last year, for the first time, I took my chances, and I say it like that on purpose, in growing growing tomato plants, which turned out, I'm going to say 50-50. Okay, not okay, but at least I gave it a try. Well, saying all that to say this, the Old Farmer's Almanac has the gardening guide. Vegetables, flowers, houseplants, herbs, and more. Something you will want to pick up if you're someone like me who has no idea what they're doing. And joining us for the first hour this morning is, as I say, a guest we've had on many times. She is the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, editor-in-chief, Janice Stillman. Janice, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you? Terrific to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun to be with you. Now, here we are, the gardening guide. Now, honestly, we have never talked about this before. How long has the gardening guide been around?
Well, the garden guide's been with us in one form or another for, boy, I think about 40 years. I think it was 2014. You know, I can't keep these years straight. But anyway, about 6 or 8 years ago, we made it a larger format book, more like your traditional 8.5 by 11 magazines, you know, that you see in the checkout stands all the time. It had been a digest-sized book prior to that for, what, about 32, 35 years, something like that, called The Gardener's Companion. And, you know, it just gets more attention and really gives us an opportunity to make more fabulous layouts, truly, with a large format magazine. So it's been immensely popular. It's an annual magazine, by the way, just like the Almanac, and so it comes out once a year. It's out now. It comes out in late February. And, you know, as you described, it really tries to inspire and inform folks on just about every kind of plant environment that around the home that we can think of.
Absolutely, and I want to cover a lot of ground this particular hour here, but people can get this. Is this sold in the same places that the almanac is sold?
Pretty much, yes, wherever the Old Farmer's Almanac is available. So all of your garden stores, your supermarkets, your home supply stores, some pharmacies, and just about anything you can think of. We have a stand that is a display that we often put it in as well. But, you know, if you really want to nail it, if you go to almanac.com/store, slash where to buy, you can actually put your zip code in and find out what stores in your area carry the Old Farmer's Almanac publications. And you can, in fact, buy it at almanac.com/store as well. There's also an e-version of the book if you prefer to carry it around in your electronic device or whatever. But, you know, it's 128 page book, and just, you know, spectacular splash of photos as far as that goes on the cover. This is a little bit of an aberration from a lot of publications you see out there. You won't find just one plant on the cover. You'll find 8 or 10 of them, because it's a series of square images, 3, 6, 10 images on the cover, from the tomatoes to the house plants to the meadow to the young child, little redhead girl here picking her peas, to your fruit trees, to some herb pictures, to your vegetables. So you've got the Old Farmer's Almanac Garden Guide right through the middle as far as the title is concerned, but you've got these 10 color photos giving you a hint of what's inside in the publication.
And I should mention, this is $7.99 to buy the actual hard copy of the magazine, which is not bad at all. It is a great guide, colorful, a lot of information in here.
And, you know, it's timeless, too, Scott, because it's the 2022 edition, but, you know, this will last for generations because the information in it is really, you know, just, as I say, timeless. I mean, it lives forever. These aren't ideas that maybe you won't implement them this year, but maybe as you're planning, as you go forward, you want to do a meadow. You may have children that grow into wanting to do garden things. You may want to put in a houseplant or give somebody a houseplant, for example, as a gift. So there's lots of ways that you can use the publication through time. And, you know, it's got recipes you might want to try later in season or even, you know, as time goes on. So there's, it's almost a book in paper form, if I may be so sort of silly about it, but you know, it's a publication that lasts well beyond its cover title, cover year.
Absolutely. You know, Janice, something interesting, houseplants are in here and listed on the cover. Now, I would imagine if you walked up to most people and you said, would you consider a houseplant gardening? They might say no. Why is a houseplant and taking care of a houseplant considered gardening?
Well, It's plant. I mean, you know, especially these days, there's a huge enthusiasm for houseplants like there hasn't been in a long time. It's sort of a, you know, developed during the COVID times, if you will, when folks were, you know, wanting to bring some life and fresh greenery and just a sense of a positivity, actually, into the home. And whether you're growing something on the counter like your herbs or whether you've got decorative plants throughout the house, you still have to maintain them. You have to be concerned about the soil they're in. You have to be concerned about the fertilizer and the watering and how much sun they get. So it is gardening. No, make no mistake about it. And whether it's houseplants or taking this on a much grander scale, we've got lots more people growing undercover, whether it's industrial size, if you will, vegetable gardeners, or just folks who've decided that they're going to use more row covers and different things. So inside something is very popular these days, and houseplants are really it. I mean, you go into some people's homes that have an array of houseplants, and they do a spectacular job. It takes time and it takes care, but there's so much that you get back from it as well.
When I think of the word gardening, I think of somebody with a patch of land or a little section out in their yard that they go to every year in the Midwest seasonably, and they take very good care of this area. They have things that are produced by this every year, and to me, that's a garden. What is a definition to you of a garden?
Well, it's really just taking care of plants, because, I mean, I understand what you mean, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, that if it's not in the ground, it's not a garden. But indeed, these days, whether it's in the house or in pots on the patio or, you know, whatever the case may be, if you're tending plants, you are gardening, in effect. I mean, we can't be, can't be kind of, dare I say, narrow-minded or snobbish about this, because it's really... there are so many ways and so many spaces that people can fit plants into. So, for example, maybe you live in an apartment environment or some area where you don't have ground space or you don't get proper sunlight that you can't grow outside in ground, and you just make do. You walk into any nursery or any garden section of a home store these days, and they've got plants for just about any environment and any size setting. So it's really an opportunity to get folks back into nature, back into tending plants, back into recognition of pollinators and just soil conditions and how plants thrive and natives. And there's so many things to consider these days when it comes to gardening and planting that, we really have to be open to just about any way that it can be manifested and handled.
You know, Janice, it's interesting. As I said in the opening, last year for the first time I tried to plant tomatoes, and it did come out okay. I mean, it did produce some tomatoes. But when we talk vegetables, what are most people doing? What are they planting?
Well, for years, tomatoes have been the number one most popular edible, you know, vegetable that people want to grow, and that's understandable because there's nothing quite like a homegrown tomato. Sorry you didn't have such good luck. That's unfortunate because, there's all kinds of reasons why and who knows what, but, it can be tricky. It can be tricky growing anything. We've found that most people's challenge is with the soil. So for whatever reason, the soil doesn't have the proper nutrients or it doesn't have the proper pH. A quick soil test is usually a good solution, or certainly a good helping of compost will make anything thrive. So I would first recommend people do that. But what are they growing? Yes, like you say, tomatoes. I think cucumbers are very popular because they vine up and, you know, folks like them. They grow easily. Zucchini, the same kind of thing because it's big. It's highly productive in most cases. Although I will confess that I grew zucchini last year and I didn't get anything off of it. I think my soil was overworked, frankly. I should have fed it more compost and I should have taken better care, but I think I was a little bit crowded. But, it's always a bit of an experiment. It's kind of what makes it interesting. When a plant thrives, you're thrilled and you feel like you've really succeeded immensely and just very gratifying. When they fail, you know, you start to wonder, what did I do wrong? What can I do differently? And how to fix this? So, it's the sun. It's a bit of fertilizer sometimes. And with tomatoes, we've got a special story here on tomato tactics, a whole collection of different people's individual ways that they made their plants thrive. And, you know, it's kind of astounding when you see that, you know, there's sort of old-fashioned techniques sometimes or just clever ideas or, just some little extra benefit that you've thrown into the soil that might make the difference. I don't want to make it sound like a mystery because so many people can make it happen, but your soil is the number one concern. The sun is second. Water is probably right up there beside those two. And then it's weeding. It's a TLC. It's just kind of staying, almost even used to say years ago, talking to your plants. And it's kind of that. There's a reason that's called nurturing your plants. It's because you're taking tender care of them. So, once you get going and you keep the weeds at bay, if you mulch properly, that, you know, you reduce the amount of work and attention you have to give to them every day. But if you, if you stick with it and you actually can see the difference on a daily basis, you can see the plant thrive. It really is so gratifying.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned this, Janice, because last year, as I say, it was my first year attempting to do that, and I am not somebody with a green thumb, and I was not aware at all how important the soil was, and I do think that ended up being my issue, because I had some very solid, hard soil that I think really was the issue.
Yeah, it could be hard soil, it could be sandy soil, it could be clay soil, but you really wanted compost. And often that involves aged animal manure, whether it's cow or horse or rabbit or chicken. And it's got to be aged 6 months to a year, 6 months minimum in most cases. It's just got the proper nutrients. It's kind of chunky. If you can also start a compost pile in your environment, in your backyard or the like, you know, with kitchen scraps, whether it be fruits or vegetables, eggshells, different things like that, and let them decay. The smaller you can put them into your compost, the sooner they'll decay. We've got lots of information on how to do a compost heap. For example, on almanac.com, just go on and search compost. You'll find some tips. But it's really, it does come down to the soil. I think we have questions from people all year long on almanac.com and the various vegetable pages and elsewhere. And nine times out of ten, I think the problem is the soil. If you're going to start and you really want to have success, you don't want to get 6 weeks into the season and say, oh, I wish I'd done this differently. I should have amended the soil. You know, either go to a local farm environment and see if you can pick up some aged manure. You can get some of the stuff in bags at the stores. You can kind of make your own. Even now, where are we? 1st of March. You know, it wouldn't be too soon to start to amend your soil for planting this coming season. At least get the stuff stocked and ready to spread. You know, just before you start planting. It really makes a tremendous difference. I've seen this myself, and I think anybody who uses compost or aged animal manure will tell you that it just is, it's like magic, honestly.
Much like anything, it seems as if there is a trick to doing something that people know, not everybody, but some people know. If you're going out to garden vegetables, what is something that you may or may not know that is just a great tip to get you started?
Boy, I hate to repeat myself, but it's really the soil. You want to make sure you're in the sun. You want to make sure you've got good depth. If you're working in the ground, you know, a raised bed in ground, you want to dig down a little bit and make sure that there is loose soil. For example, if you're growing carrots, so that the carrots can actually push through. You don't want hard clay or hard pan down there that they'll get stunted. Even your tomatoes, that just about anything needs some area to, have the roots spread. The sun factor, location, 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 they say. So, some people don't realize that the shadow of a building or tree could affect the success of their garden a little bit later in season, especially as, you know, after the longest day in June, then the days start to get shorter and the shadow moves, you know, yet again. So, I mean, there are just so many things to think about, but I don't want people to come away thinking that it's difficult. Let's face it, people have been growing their food for ever, you know, centuries, for all time. People grow food in some capacity. Go out and give it a go, give it a try, and, you can start from seed or seedlings. We often recommend that certainly beginner gardeners start with seedlings, which is the small plant that you pick up at the home store or the nursery. Because you can start seeds. Sometimes if you do them indoors, it's 6 or 8 weeks before season, and then you've got to be concerned about the moisture and the light, and sometimes it leads to the dampening off problem where you get mold in the soil and you lose the plant. It can be very discouraging. So if you're a beginner, think about, or even, you know, an experienced gardener, think about using the seedlings. They can make seedlings for just about, listen to me, they can grow seedlings for just about anything. I didn't think you could grow beets from seedlings, but I've seen them in the stores, for example, so that's one that surprised the heck out of me. But, they've got a good start already. You can identify them from the weeds. You can see the difference in the foliage pattern when you get the seedling in the ground. The weeds start to come up. You know which one is which, and you can pull out the weeds more easily. Again, if you put it in the proper soil, give it the right conditions, it's generally bound to succeed.
You know, Janice, one of the biggest discussions that's had every year is watering. And this has been going on for years. Do you do it sunrise, sunset? When do you water these things?
Well, you know, sometimes they can be a little bit different. You usually don't want to water middle of the day because the water on the leaf of a plant could cause it to burn. It just could get, the sun could be too intense. Often in the morning or the evening, and you want to water the ground, not necessarily the plant. So that's something to think about. You want to water thoroughly and water the roots heavily once a week, more than a little bit every day, for example. Just a good soaking is better. Certainly if it rains, you can be a little bit more lenient. You don't have to necessarily go in there all the time with that. But it really, you know, you're looking at about 2 inches of water a week, or usually more as it gets warmer, depending on the amount of rainfall that, you know, might occur in your environment.
When it comes to flowers, are more people into flowers than vegetables? We've had this great increase in vegetables, it seems like.
Well, it seems, from what I've gleaned and, you know, learned in different resources over the past couple of months, flowers are certainly coming back. Flowers have never gone out of favor, certainly. You know, cutting gardens also have been around with us. But things move in trends and cycles, you know, and people's enthusiasm shifts, and that's normal. Certainly, if you introduce some flowers into your garden area, then, you know, you're going to draw the pollinators. That's going to really help to the plants to produce the fruits, and so that's a benefit. People are enjoying just cutting fresh flowers and bringing them indoors and sharing bouquets. We did learn, too, that more and more people are growing flowers and actually selling them out of their own backyard as, you know, cut flowers. Nothing is really new and different, if you will, in the gardening environment, because it's things that people have been doing for years, but it's more cyclical. So, you know, it's just people enjoy the flowers, whether it's edible flowers, whether it's decorative flowers, whether it's vines, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So certainly, yes, flowers are popular again. You know, there was a time it was gardening rooms. It was decorating the garden with different artifacts and things. So it's kind of cyclical. And again, people do this now, whether it's popular or not, people will continue with the pattern that they happen to enjoy. But raised beds versus in-ground, no-till versus, you know, digging down. So there are different methods and popular ideas that kind of circulate, you know, over time. And then something else pops up and sort of attention shifts. But you know, if you make space in your area or your pots for some flowering plants, again, you'll draw the pollinators, the bees, and introduce some color, and it's just delightful. So whatever you grow, whatever you like, it's you can't go wrong.
Now, annuals versus perennials, which are more popular?
Oh, heavens, I certainly couldn't take a stand on that. I mean, annuals for a long time have been considered desirable because they fill in spaces. For example, if you've got a lot of perennials, you know, along a footpath in front of your or beside of your house or somewhere in your garden, then the annuals can be easy fill. You plant them, water them, take care of them, and give them the proper light, and then they fill in a space. They get large and bring in a lot of color. But your perennials come back year after year, so you don't have to start over. You don't have to make the choices. So if you mix a bed of both, and we're talking, I'm thinking anyway, ornamentals as opposed to edibles, for example. But if you bring in, you know, the combination, then you can introduce fresh new annuals every year, different colors, different sizes, different textures, different looks among your perennials. Then you kind of still get the benefit of a nice change and, you know, an opportunity to make a new, fresh decision. But your perennials keep you, you know, you're not starting from fresh every year with the perennials in the bed.
Now, is there, like with tomatoes, is there a popular flower that people tend to gravitate toward?
Oh, my. You know, there are so many flowers. I couldn't begin to make a guess on that one. You know, lots of folks like daisy-looking flowers. Certainly your bulbs, your tulips and like that, especially as we come into spring here. Nasturtiums, dahlias are spectacular. Gladiolas are fun. Your bleeding hearts. And I mean, there's so many. It's just, I would be interesting to ask your listeners what kinds of flowers are their favorites, and I'm sure just about everybody would come up with something different. So, you know, far be it for me to pick lilies, spectacular. I'm just looking through our trend section up front, and, you know, it really depends on what you like. You want some aroma, you could go for some lavender, for example. Russian sage, if you can control it, is grand. It just stands up and just introduces a height and the purple color from the flower. Sunflowers, people love sunflowers, whether it's in a garden environment or just as, you know, something to stand out in the yard environment. Zinnias have been very popular. Put the seeds in the ground, is almost never fail. and they produce fabulous colors, different heights, different size flowers, sort of the daisy look. You know, it really depends on your particular preference. Coleus, you've got this spectacularly colored leaf, the foliage that doesn't so much flower, it's just, you know, brings so much it's wild colors. Peonies, your perennials, they come up and stand up tall and look great in a vase. Really, there's just so many, it's impossible for me to say. Somebody else might feel differently, but the more the merrier. In fact, I can't choose. I had somebody come to my yard, and I said, what can I put in here? And she proposed. She says, what do you like? I said, I like everything, truly. And I think in my position here, I get exposed to so many plants and so many kinds of things that can grow. And, you know, I go into the store, and I love them all, and I honestly can't decide. I'm embarrassed to say, in a way, but I get stuck between that annual versus perennial matter all the time, and I tried last year to put in some things, and I'm hoping that they survive. Something as simple as a hydrangea, you know, produces a nice bush plant, but also spectacular blooms. If you like that big blue ball, I like the blue myself. Sometimes it's a white ball. Proper soil conditioning, you can get the pink ball of flowers. You know, it really depends on what your space is, what you like, what your own preferences, but there are so many shapes and sizes. I'm looking right now on my desk. I've got some carnations, and those are look like little roses, you know. So it really depends on what you like.
When it comes to houseplants, it seems to me that maybe 20, 30 years ago, that more people tended to have houseplants. Is that just in my mind, or are they as popular now as they ever were?
Well, again, it's a cyclical thing, you know. So it seems like it growing up, you know, we sound like we're sort of the same age or something close to that. But anyway, you know, your mother might have had more plants in the house and less in the yard. But it's just a cyclical thing. But again, you know, houseplants have come back roaring. And I think one of the more popular ones is the succulents because they're small. They don't require a lot of attention. You know, that's the often spiky, spiny, fat leaf plants that we see that just kind of bulbous, sort of like an aloe, but so many different shapes and sizes. So it really, you know, and houseplants so much brighten a room that they've come back. So they've never really gone out of fashion, but it's just a cyclical preference among people.
Are there certain things you don't want to grow inside?
Well, a lot of perennials, of course, don't do so well inside because they might need more sunshine than a house can provide. You know, they just and things that need pollinators don't necessarily do so well in the house because, you know, you don't want the bugs, bees, and bugs and other things in the house doing that. You can hand pollinate some things, of course, but it doesn't work for everything.
You know, is gardening generational in a way? And I guess what I mean by that is, it seems the people during COVID, as you say, when we had this boom of people going and planting vegetables and things of that nature, it seemed as if it was very industrialized by that generation. They came in and they bought the equipment and they went to the garden stores and they did this sort of thing. And it almost seems like the past generations that have always done this, you know, they had a shovel and they went and got maybe some compost and they just went to work with their hands. It seems a little different now.
Well, I think, you know, the influences that we see, for example, with, you know, life being 24/7 and instant everything and information is right at your fingertips for, you know, countless things and, you know, food you can cook up in seconds in a microwave if that's your preference. I mean, everything can happen so much more quickly. There was a tendency, I would say, sort of during COVID time, but maybe a little bit before too, but there was this idea that people wanted things, they wanted plants to grow instantly. They wanted them now. What do I have to wait for? They wanted quick growing things, quick producing things. And so, you know, for whatever reason, it may have been more young people, but it may have been a lot of just beginning gardeners of any age, but there was this sensibility that, you know, what's taking so long? So I think, you know, there was this idea of like, okay, just put it in the ground, and now what? And the impatience was kind of became noticeable, and so maybe they tended not to take care of the plant after a while, lost interest, you know, because it didn't happen so quickly. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of understanding that things take time, and, you know, whether it's on the seed pack and you get an idea of how long it takes for a seed to germinate and then to actually produce, and, you know, you get that number on a packet and often in this plant tag if you've been buying seedlings. But I think, yeah, there was this idea of it's very mechanical and this is all I need to do, and, you know, whether it's a raised bed or a pot, you just put the plant in the soil, and this goes back to it's got to be the proper soil, it's got to be well, you know, compost if you're talking about vegetables, and, you know, certain, you don't just dig up soil, for example, for a house plant, even from the backyard and stick it in that because maybe it doesn't drain well, and maybe it doesn't have the proper nutrients. You know, people didn't, maybe neglected the holes in the bottom of the pot so that the soil, excuse me, the water would drain through the soil. So there's a number of things that people thought could just happen. You just put it into the ground or into dirt and something will thrive, and it, you learn the hard way. And, you know, hopefully come to appreciate that in the same way that we humans, for example, have an appetite for different foods or different environments, different settings. We get tired. We need to sleep. We need something else. We need water. Plants also have their own needs, whether it's, you know, fertilizer, again, the proper soil they need. They can't sit in water just like we can't sit in water all the time. We'll get wrinkled fingers. It used to happen. Maybe that doesn't even happen to people anymore, but if you wash the dishes, for example, or took a long bath, your flesh on your fingers would all wrinkle up and tighten up. But, you know, we see things happen to us in the same way that things happen to plants if they're given too much of something or not the proper environment. So everything needs its own special care. So, again, and going back to it, I think, yes, there was this sense of, you know, impatience and I got to have it now and what does this mean? And that it's really about tending. It goes back to nurturing and taking care of this growing thing. Lots of people have pets now, and they have special needs as well. Well, plants are really not that different. They're often pets for people as well, of a sort.
What do we need to know about herbs?
Well, they're delicious in most cases, and they really benefit, you know, your home cooking. But herbs, again, have special needs. You know, it's the sun, it's the soil. It's best if you're a beginner gardener often to go out and buy the seedlings, but there are a number of herbs, for example, in the garden guide this year, whether it's basil and parsley, which are very common. Lots of folks grow their own basil for pesto or use parsley. It's the most common kitchen herb probably out there. You buy the different big leaf or small leaf. Easy to grow in the garden. So is cilantro. Spicy piquant food is very popular these days. You can grow your own cilantro for your own salsa, for example. Marjoram, which has got a nice sort of complex flavor, sort of like oregano with a hint of citrus and mint. But it's not hard to grow herbs either. But again, they need special conditions, and they also often benefit the other plants in the garden. So basil and parsley near your tomatoes can help the tomatoes to thrive. Cilantro will come up almost on its own if you drop some seeds from one season to the next. That is, you know, overwinter the seeds in the ground, the cilantro will pop up. Herbs are easy to grow. It can be a little bit tricky, if only because, you know, they're often considered to be Mediterranean. Some need cool weather, some need hot, warmer weather, but, you know, it's certainly doable, and more people are into herbs these days. You can often grow herbs in the kitchen windowsill. In pots, they're very popular and easy, but again, also in ground. So it's really, once you try some of these things, whether you're growing the flowers or the vegetables or the herbs or the houseplants, you'll find they just need some special attention. You'll see if the foliage droops, maybe it needs water. If the foliage turns brown and the tips, maybe it's too much water. You know, there's somebody, you start to recognize what some of the issues are, and so you can help your plants thrive.
You know, it seemed as if when people gardened years and years ago, they were doing this to eat, and they were doing this to beautify their homes. Why do people garden now? I mean, they eat the stuff, but it's not the main driver.
Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. I think a lot of people continue to grow food for their pantry, whether you're going to can it and keep it or freeze it somehow. But, I wouldn't discount that at all. I think a lot of people do grow their own food because it's they like the taste of it. They prefer the organic, natural nature of it as opposed to not knowing where something came from in the supermarket. A lot of people will go to farmers markets because for whatever reason they can't or don't grow everything that the market offers and they really want something that's grown locally. It is beautification. It is a great satisfaction in doing this. I mean, it's one of the most popular pastimes that people actually do these days at any age. It brings patience. It brings you calm. You're out in the soil. You're being productive. You're out in the sun. You're getting some exercise, stooping and crouching and standing and moving and hauling and pushing and whatever the case may be, digging. I wouldn't discount it at all. Across the country, folks have more and more people are gardening. It seems like the numbers just continue to go up, whether it's the number of people gardening or the amount of money that is reported to be spent on gardening. So it's beautification, it's satisfaction, it's just wonderful to eat, very healthy. It's not something that's going out of favor. It's actually increasing in interest.
Well, I guess that's kind of what I was getting at is I think, not that it was people's main source of food, although in some cases it was, they can these things, they put them in their pantries, they did that sort of thing, and there might have only been one grocery store in town that they went to, and they went to it very rarely. The people who seem to be gardening now, at least in most cities, it seems to be more of a pastime. They have so much produce that they end up even giving it to coworkers and people that they know. It's just something fun for them to do, relaxing, therapeutic in a way.
Well, all of that, yeah. And, I mean, sharing has never gone out of style. So if you get a couple of, huge zucchinis or even small zucchinis, it's nice to be able to give them away because you can't always eat them. You don't necessarily want them at the time they turn in. Same with tomatoes. So, it's that idea of the satisfaction of seeing something grow and seeing something, come from a seed that's the size of, often your fingernail or even smaller, and to produce a plant that actually makes food. For example, it occurs to me, too, that kids don't even know where food comes from. So the idea of getting them out there and showing them that this is, a carrot, this is a beet, these are potatoes, this is tomato, this is zucchini, this is, whatever the case may be, that they can actually pull out of the ground and put on the dinner table later. So, folks are doing it for entertainment of a sort and for gratification and, get off the screen, frankly, just to do something that's more manual, more tactile, more just outdoors. You don't have to go far if you're doing it at your home. Some people, more and more community gardens are usually popular because people don't have space, or they just, even if they have space at home, they may want to also just get a bed and be among other people like-minded. You learn things, you meet people, there's great pleasure and satisfaction to be had from doing that. More communities seem to be introducing community garden spaces into their neighborhoods. We've learned that people are sharing front yards, for example, where they can grow vegetables as a result sharing the harvest as well. So it's just, again, this gratification and pleasure in doing something that it seems so naive to say perfectly natural, but just, brings people a great deal of pleasure. So, it's just a wonderful pastime, a wonderful activity, a wonderful, thing to do. It seems so silly to make it so basic, but, and again, whether you succeed or don't, it can be, gives you something to talk about, and I don't mean that, banally. It's just, it's just a wonderful pastime.
51 and a half minutes past the hour. We're chatting with Janice Stillman, editor-in-chief of the Old Farmer's Almanac. The Old Farmer's Almanac Garden Guide, Vegetables, Flowers, Houseplants, Herbs, and More is available, the 2022 edition. Don't miss that. Janice, in our final few minutes here, I want to talk about landscaping. What are the trends in 2022 when it comes to landscaping?
Well, you know, a lot of folks are converting their lawns, or a portion of them, into edible garden areas, and or at least introducing some edible plants into their you know, front yards among some of their perennial other things, plants and things. We're seeing meadow crafting, people making meadows where there's no lawn to mow, for example, and it's just flowers and native plants and a lot more color, and it looks wilder. This wild, the wildness idea that is to let things go natural, but even control a little bit, for example, if you're doing a meadow by the different flowering seeds that you throw out there. So there's a little more control of that, but it's probably a little bit more the wilding technique, or again, introducing edibles into a space where it used to be a neat lawn and, you know, shrubbery kind of arrangement. There's nothing wrong with that. It depends, again, on how much time and maintenance you want to introduce into your environment and your life. But I would say this, the wildness technique in landscaping that is not necessarily so manicured these days.
Landscaping is very interesting because I don't know that I have seen any bigger growth in small business than I have in landscaping companies in the last 10 years, because it seems like every business, every public building, they're all landscaping now. And they did that to some degree, but it doesn't seem like to the degree that they have in the last 10 years.
Well, I think with, you know, in family environments where the mother and father, you know, both work out of the home, or even these days work in the home but don't really have time to do the maintenance that may be required on the property depending on the size, or, you know, that may be part of that. Time is of the essence for a lot of people, and or maybe they want to spend their time doing other things or with the kids or, you know, whatever the case may be. I can't speak exactly to, you know, the reasons for so many more landscaping services, but, you know, I mean, not everybody can be a gardener. It really, you know, has the motivation or time or resources, and so maybe they take people on to do that. But, you know, everybody's got to eat, and they've got to make a living, and if, you know, the businesses are working out and everybody's happy with it, then so much the better.
Is there any wrong thing you can do when it comes to gardening in general? Just big mistakes that are made?
Oh, boy. I would probably go back to soil and just being, you know, a little bit hasty in your expectations of what the soil is going to produce if you haven't tested it or really haven't taken concern for what the, you know, what it might consist of, the quality of the soil. You know, and the sun, and, you know, what the plant needs and where you put it. So it's not a fail-safe. Not everything will grow under every condition. You do have to be careful and take some note of what the plant requires, but I suppose that would be among the biggest mistakes. I mean, we all make mistakes. Every season you're going to find something doesn't work out, you know, in a garden of whatever sort. And even the things that go wild. I had a Russian sage. I loved the plant, but it started to take over, so I decided to take it out. I mean, there's some things, and that was after several years, mind you. But, you know, so there, whether you call it a mistake or just a change of heart, or, you know, you just, something just goes awry in some fashion. You know, so things change, things happen. But it's a mistake. It's so individual, so unique to the situation. It would be hard for me to say there would be more than soil. I don't know what it might be.
Here in the Midwest, because we have such volatile weather, especially this time of year, when should you start doing things outside gardening-wise, flowers, vegetables?
Well, with your vegetables, you want to make sure that before you plant, the soil is the proper temperature. You know, that is, you know, you have to wait till it's, I think, generally about 60 degrees in the soil, and that's a couple inches down, because if you plant some things that don't survive the cold, you'll be really disappointed, whether you go out and invest in seedlings and plant them too soon or whatever. So take care to note an almanac.com. You can find all that information on individual vegetables and also in our Vegetable Gardener's Handbook, new a couple of years ago. You can find that on almanac.com or on Amazon as well. So it's soil temperature, you know, with and similar really with annuals and some perennials. If you want something to thrive, you want to, you know, don't start too soon, but be patient. And, you know, here we are, it's March 1st, and, you know, I think your climate is probably not too dissimilar from New England in terms of you're not really out of the woods yet for winter. Things could still happen, and it's still chilly out there. You might get a fabulous spring day, but it's really not time to garden until the temperature of the soil is quite ready. And you can get, kind of get a sense of that after, you know, a week or 10 days of relatively mild conditions. Then there are a lot of things like the phenology when you look to other things in nature to, you know, tell you when to plant. We've got these this information on almanac.com as well, but and in the almanac it's, you know, when certain flowers bloom, and I'm sorry I don't have this on the tip of my tongue, but then it's time to plant something else. They're all phenology, it's called. But for example, when lilacs bloom or when dandelions come up, there are certain cues as to when the soil and conditions are ready for other things to be planted.
Janice, with about 2 minutes left here, what is your favorite part, personally, of the 2022 edition of the Garden Guide?
Boy, you know, every article for me is something fresh and new. I think what was most fun for me was the tomato story, where all these different treatments, different techniques for making tomatoes succeed come up on that one, and the greenhouse effect, the idea of the different kinds of plants that you can put into different rooms in your house, you know, whether it's the bedroom or the bathroom or the kitchen. We've got two or three suggestions given the light and the temperature typically and the humidity, for example, in the bathroom, you know, or the kitchen as well. So Tova Martin has got some great ideas for folks who don't know quite maybe where to start with houseplants in those rooms.
And again, where can people get the almanac?
They can get the almanac and the Garden Guide wherever books and magazines are sold, including your home stores, your groceries, your pharmacies, your supermarkets, your sometimes your Tractor Supply, your Walmarts, your all your big box stores, certainly on Amazon or on almanac.com as well.
And this has been around for quite a while, and we look forward to more years of this. Do you think gardening will ever, in this fast-paced world of ours, ever be past tense?
Oh, heavens, no. I can't imagine. No, because I think so long as we're 24/7 and so very digital and you know, hands off, that way people will want, again, the tactile experience and just getting out in the air and getting off the screen.
The guest this hour has been Janice Stillman, Editor-in-Chief of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Remember, the 2022 edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac Garden Guide, vegetables, flowers, houseplants, herbs, and more, is available. You won't want to miss this. Thank you, Janice. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Scott. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. Everything you ever wanted to know about gardening. Be back in about 15 minutes.
Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle,